I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tiny Tommy McDonald was the last man on the playing field to know when it began to rain. But size meant nothing to Tommy. Team colors and jersey numbers changed, but Tommy never did. He compensated for his short stature with a hearty appetite for gobbling up any pass thrown his way.
Any ball that came near me, I wanted to be like a vacuum cleaner. I mean, it was mine. You know, I turned me on.
They don't write them like that anymore, do they? Oh, God, I love that old stuff. Anyway, we brought that in today because this is our Scheib sports this week, this moment in Philadelphia sports history. And it was on this day, I forget the year, that Tommy McDonald was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and a man who had a whole lot to do with that. Ray Dinger, my old partner, joins us now. Ray, how are you, pal?
Hello, guys. How are you? Glenn, Mike, how's it going?
Going well so far, Ray. Great to hear from you.
Good.
He's two hours in, and he hasn't quit yet, so we're all right.
I know. I've been listening, doing very well. I'm enjoying it. The year was 1998.
Okay, there you go. And as I said, today's the anniversary. You were there. You introduced Tommy. It's an amazing story about how, you know, he helped you as a kid. You helped him as an adult. And it became a play. And the play is coming this month, or I guess next month. We're still in July. In August, to the Hershey Theater. 3 days, August 18th through 20th. You got some good people helping you. Ross Tucker is going to be your guest host one night.
Yep, opening night. Ross Tucker is going to be there to host the post-show Q&A. I'm really excited about that. He seems like he's bringing most of his family.
Sold out audience.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. But this, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, this is ever since we launched Tommy and Me way back in 2016. We've played in a lot of different theaters all over the area. But the one place I've always really, really wanted to go is I wanted to bring the play to Hershey, because that's where it all started. You know, the first time, you know, I met Tommy McDonald. You know, I was a little 10-year-old kid with an autograph book standing outside the locker room door in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which was where the Eagles had their training camp in the 50s. And that was where I met him for the first time, got his autograph for the first time. He handed me his helmet for the first time and said, "Come on, little brother, let's walk to the practice field." That was where it all started. It all started at Hershey. And, you know, I know they had this beautiful theater back in Hershey, and I just always thought, boy, wouldn't it be so cool if we could kind of bring this story back to its point of origin, you know, and we're finally going to get a chance to do that August 18th, 19th, and 20th, and I'm really looking forward to it.
By the way, let me just tell people, tickets for that can be ordered at HersheyTheater.com.
Ray, yep. When did you know that this was a story that you had to write, and how did you know that writing a play was the best way to tell it?
I really felt it. I guess the weekend in Canton. I guess this weekend in Canton, August 1st, 1998. When I was there and I was in the middle of it, and you know, riding in the parade with him in the open convertible through the streets of Canton. You're riding in an open convertible with your boyhood hero, and there's a 250,000 people lining the streets cheering, and you're on your way to the Hall of Fame, and you're going to give the speech to present your boyhood hero for induction. I said, "Wow. This is really a good story," and I just really kind of wanted. It took me a while to figure out exactly what I wanted to do with it, but I knew I wanted to tell it, because the idea of the whole sort of full circle experience, starting from the time that I was a little kid and he was my boyhood hero, to this conclusion where, you know, we're going to be standing together on the steps of the Hall of Fame. It's just a great story, and it was just a question of what was the best way to tell it. And I really decided let me just give it a try as a play, because I think it might work. And you know, I wrote it and brought it to Joe Canuso at Theater Exile, and 2016 we put it on stage, and here we are all these years later, and we're still doing it. It's really been a great journey.
Well, I said this to you many times before. You created something that is now a permanent part of the arts landscape in this area, and I mean, I know how many people who have seen it. People have seen it two or three times. As you say, now you're going out to the Hershey Theater, where people who maybe haven't had the opportunity to see it before will. And the best thing I don't know about the best, but one of the things I can say about your play that I think is really important is my wife doesn't give a damn about football. And my wife was unaware of who Tommy McDonald was. And she loves this play, and she's seen it four times, and will go to see it a fifth. So it's a story for sports fans, but it's really a story about a relationship between two people that goes on for decades, and it's also a story about a kid becoming a man and how what you expect yourself to be as a kid and what you become. And I think that's really the beauty of it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It really is that. That's. I think you summed it up very well. And it really is an idea of a relationship changing over time. I mean, when I was a little boy, I mean, he gave me so much in terms of his friendship, his time, you know, taking me for rides around Hershey and his cherry red convertible, and making me feel, when he would call me little brother, I mean, it felt real to me. I mean, it really felt like we had that kind of relationship. So, I mean, he had a lot to do with me, my life. I mean, I really think that getting close to him and kind of getting that peek inside the world of pro football kind of gave me the courage to pursue the career that I pursued. So he did a lot for me back in those days. And then it just worked out in such a way that when I became a sports writer, I was in a position to kind of give something back to him and kind of mount this campaign to try and get him into where he belonged. We should have been all along, which was the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1998. It finally all came together. And it's really great. I mean, it's, you know, Tommy passed away a few years ago, but you know, I was talking to his daughter Patricia a couple months ago, just when I told her to tell her that we were coming to Hershey, and she said, you know, that I'm going to come up there, I want to see this play again because I've seen it every year. And she said, you know what you've done for our family? You've kept Dad alive for us. And I hadn't really thought about that, but what a beautiful sentiment. And the fact that we've been able to do this and keep Tommy's memory alive has really been a great thing.
So, Ray, I have to ask you, Eagles training camp has begun. What are your plans for week one, Sunday, September 10th, Eagles at Lions?
I'm going to be sitting on the couch, you know, watching the game on TV. Everybody asked the question. I've been asked it so many times. You know, are you really going to have the yellow legal pad out? And are you really going to be logging the game? And of course I am. Of course I am. I'm going to have the yellow legal tablet out, and I'm going to be charting every play, and I'm going to be writing down every coverage, and I'm going to be writing down every personnel package, and I'm going to be logging all the third down efficiencies and all of that stuff, red zone. Because at this point, after all these years, I don't know any other way to watch a game. I really don't know any other way to watch a football game other than doing that. So, yeah, on September the 11th, when the Eagles play the Lions, I'll be doing everything I've done of all these years. The only thing is I'll be doing it on the couch, probably with the bulldog in my lap.
Okay. One of the things that our listeners want to know is your opinion as an old head on the very, very brisk Eagles practices, which last about 58 minutes and involve no hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, that's the nature of today's NFL. You know, I understand it. A lot of it is mandated by the collective bargaining agreement. You know, it really is kind of out of the coach's hand to a large degree. You know, how many times you can practice, how long you can practice, how much you can hit. I mean, the coaches can put their own personal touch on it, I suppose. But the rules are pretty. The rules are the rules, and you kind of have to observe them. And it's all geared towards player safety. And I'm in favor of that. And if Nick Sirianni is going to be real careful about how physical his camp is and how much hitting there's going to be, you know, that was kind of the way they were last year. I mean, I saw it. I was out there last year, and I saw it. And, you know, I wondered, like a lot of people, I wondered if it was tough enough. But I kind of got his message that we're going to try and keep our team healthy. And if you look at it, for the most part, they were. I mean, they were one of the healthier teams for a team that got racked by injuries for years, was losing guys right and left. You know, last year was one of their better years. So I know this sort of rubs some people the wrong way, that there doesn't seem to be much contact here, but I think it worked for them last year. The one thing I would say about it is if he wants to sort of minimize the hitting, I kind of understand that, but you need the reps. If you're just going, you know, guys need to be on the field. Guys need to be on the field. Your quarterback sure needs to be on the field. And you can practice without hitting, but you need reps, 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 and more reps. Because you have a young quarterback. You have a new receiver who's new to this offense. Devontae Smith, as good as he is only in his second year. Those guys can only benefit by as many reps as you can give them. So you don't have to have them out there hitting every day. But you need the reps to be ready to play because the schedule – listen, the schedule lays out in such a way that their first four games are very winnable. And this team has been hampered now in recent years by getting off to slow starts and having to come from behind. And they've been able to do it, including last year. They fought their way into the playoffs. But, boy, it would be sweet to start this year 4-0. So you better be ready. When we're talking about that game in Detroit, you better be ready to play that day. And, you know, I think that, you know, you can cut back on the hitting a little bit because that's the nature of today's NFL. But, boy, you got to get the reps in because you got to get this passing game where you need it to be.
Well, that segues to my next question for you here, Ray. Let's pretend for a moment that you're the offensive coordinator or head coach or certainly the play caller of the Eagles. You saw what they did in the second half of last season running the football. You know all the questions about Jalen Hurts. You know that they have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. What's the best way for them to run this offense? And what way do you think they need to run this offense to be kind of, for lack of a better way of putting it, kind of satisfied with themselves and the way things are supposed to go?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Mike. I just think this offense, pretty much like every other offense, is better when it's balanced. You know, when you can do... I've always thought it's just a very simple formula. Andy and I used to talk about this all the time when I used to tell him he needed to run the ball more.
And he told me, I'm sure he welcomed that, yeah.
Yeah, and Andy always heard and told me to mind your own business. But my philosophy was, and I said it so many times, that Andy, you're a much better team if you can do two things instead of just one. I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue against that. I mean, if you can run it and throw it, you're a better team than if you're just doing one thing. And that not just applies to that team, but it applies across the board. And I think that with this team, too. I mean, they certainly demonstrated last year they can run it. And they have the offensive line back, and they have backs, and they certainly have a quarterback that's efficient RPOing it. So they can run the ball. There's no question about that. They can run it on pretty much anybody. But to really ramp this offense up, they need to have a more balanced attack, and they need to be able to throw it. And people keep talking to me about, you know, I don't know if Jalen Hurts has a strong enough arm. It's not about arm strength. You know, it's not just purely about arm strength. It's really about being efficient in your passing game. It's being able to throw the ball accurately and throw it on time. I mean, last year in the last eight games, you know, Jalen Hurts only threw four touchdown passes in the red zone. Last eight games. And he was 31st in completion percentage in the red zone.
Yeah.
Now, that's not about throwing the ball far. Mm-hmm. And that's not about arm strength. That's about executing in the narrow windows that they give you in the NFL. That's where he has to get better. You know, he doesn't have to develop a Brett Favre arm or an Elway arm. He never will. He's just not built that way. But he can be a winning quarterback if he becomes efficient in the areas where he has to be efficient, which are in those, you know, 12 to 18 yard digs, those slants, that all that stuff they're got to run the offense, and especially from the 20 yard line on in. If he can get really efficient down there, and I think adding Brown to the offense is going to help them in that regard, then they'll be approaching that balanced offense that you need to win in the NFL. I really think that they have a chance to be pretty good this year. I really do.
Love it.
I'm excited about that.
I love that. Ray, real quickly, I want to segue into the Phillies. I told you before the season they were going to make the playoffs. You scoffed. Are you with me now? Come on, Ray.
Well,
Bandwagon's got room for you.
Yeah, I know. I think that they will probably be one of three teams fighting for the last playoff spot. You know, the way I look at it, there's probably, you know, you're going to, you know, you got the Mets and the Braves are going to go from the East. Dodgers and the Padres are going to go from the West. You're going to get one team out of the Central, probably Milwaukee. And then you've got one spot left. And I think there's going to be three teams fighting for it. It's going to be the Phillies, the Cardinals, and the Giants. And the Giants, to me, look like they're going in the wrong direction.
Yep.
So, you know, I think they'll be there in September. If they can just hang in kind of where they are right now until Harper gets back, then, yeah, then I think that I think they have a shot to get to the postseason.
Look at you today, all fun and smiles. So, Ray, I miss you, pal. I do. It was great to see you the other day for lunch.
I enjoyed it.
And, you know, I needed two guys here. I don't even want to say replace you because nobody replaces you, but I got Mike Sielski on Saturdays, Jody McDonald on Sundays, Ray.
Yeah, I know. I'm delighted for you because you and I talked about this. You know, we talked, I mean, you knew months before my announcement where I was going with this, and we talked a lot about what you wanted to do. And, you know, I knew the direction you wanted to go with the show, and we talked about guys. And, you know, we both said right away that I thought Mike was a perfect guy. I mean, Jody was a given because you had the great history with Jody, and you guys are great together. You really are. But of the other guys, you know, I just thought Mike was just a natural fit, and I have no doubt. I mean, I've done stuff with Mike. Mike and I have done some stuff together. He's been kind enough to come out to Tommy and me not once but twice to do the Q&A, and Mike's great. And, you know, Mike is great, and you two guys together, I think you've shown it just in the first 2 hours today. It's going to be a terrific partnership. So, you know, I'm like everybody else in the audience. I can't wait to tune in every Saturday.
Check's in the mail, Ray. Thank you.
There you go.
Ray, I got somebody who wants to say hi to you. It's a member of your cast coming out to Hershey, Frank Nardi. Hey, Frank.
What? Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Hello, Frank. Great to hear from you. Are you all excited about going to Hershey, man?
Oh, I can't wait. Like you were saying, I can't wait to bring it back to where it all began.
By the way, Frank plays young Tommy McDonald. So, Frank, I don't know if you heard the intro into this where we played Tommy getting excited. Not that you, I've heard you do it perfectly, but even a little more inspiration for you.
Those were some of the clips that I was able to listen to so I could sort of get into character and sort of learn that little twang that Tommy had in his voice.
I know it's going to be it's really going to be great, and you know, we had to find a new actor to play the young me because all the guys, they keep outgrowing it, and unfortunately it's not like Bart Simpson where you draw the 8 year old and he stays 8 year old forever.
Yeah,
you know, these kids grow up, so we had to keep changing, and so we've got a new young Ray, but we're really looking forward to it. I know that I've talked to Tom Teddy and Matt Pfeiffer, and we can't wait to get going. August 18th, 19th, and 20th. It's going to be great.
Frank, I got to run. I appreciate you checking in. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to see everybody in Hershey.
All right. Thank you so much. All
right. Thanks, Frank. See you there.
So, Ray, for a guy in retirement, I just have to say, let's go through this, okay? You got the Hershey Theater coming up August 18th, 19th, 20th.
Right.
Tickets at thehersheytheater.com. Tomorrow, you're schlepping out to Lancaster, Ray?
Yes.
I'm sure your wife's delighted about that retirement Sunday. You got a book signing at the Barnes & Noble in Lancaster from 1 to 3 at the Red Rose Commons on Fruitville Pike.
Right.
All right. Well, you'll knock them dead there. And then coming up in September, actually, you and I have a thing together. I'm looking forward to this. I get to play James Lipton.
Yes, you do.
We're doing a Ray Dinger profile at the speaker series at the Uptown Performing Arts Center in Westchester, September 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets, Ray, I'm really looking forward. Just you and I on a stage is going to be a lot of fun. Tickets.
That's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. I mean, because that's the Wednesday. That's the Wednesday that the NFL regular season kicks off. So we'll have, interest will be at its height, and it'll be great to just be back together with you again.
It will be a delight.
There you go. I'll do all the James Lipton. Like, what is your favorite word? Tickets available at uptownwestchester.org. Hey, pal, it's always nice to talk to you.
Ray, thank you so much for calling in. Thanks for the good words, and I will do my best to hit the mark of excellence in the standard that you established.
Hey, man, you're gonna do just fine. I mean, you guys together, it's going to be great. It really is. I'm really looking forward to listening to you every week, and I hope you don't mind if I pop on now and again just to say hi.
No, that's not allowed.
I don't believe that's going to be a problem. All right, buddy, be well. I'll talk to you. I'll talk
to you
this week.
Take care, fellas.
All right, see you.
Take care, Ray.
There you go. Great guy.
No, that was wonderful, that was really very nice. Appreciative of what he said.
There you go. You got the papal blessing right there.
Yeah, we can see the smoke out of 24th and Market right now.
Is it the white puff or the black? I forget which is the puff when they get the new puff.
I don't know. With Ray, it's got to be Kelly Green.
There
guess,
you
right?
go. Nicely done. Mike in Maple Glen joins us. Hey, Mike.
Hi. How you doing? Best of luck in your new show.
Thanks.
It's an honor to follow Ray. It's the white smoke. Tells you you have a pope.
There you go. Thank you.
Phillies can get the 94 wins if they go 27-10. I know it's going to be tough, but yeah, against the Cubs, Pirates,
ambitious
group, and then just go 500, 14-13 against the rest of their schedule, so they have a chance. And this pitching staff is at a half a run less than they were last year. So without any addition, they've already lowered the runs they're giving up, even with a terrible defense.
So are you saying you don't see a need for a move? Is that what you're saying?
When I called in, I said, I want to talk about what happens if they can't do anything.
Okay.
If they remain status quo, there's still a shot at winning.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, because as I said earlier in the show, as much as Dave Dombrowski has a penchant for the big move, and he has said, you know, I love superstars, I just wonder what the level of hesitation on his part will be in moving some of these prospects. Do I think they're going to make a move? Yes, I do. Do I think it's necessarily going to be on the scale that a lot of people might want? Maybe not you, but a lot of other Phillies fans. That I'm not sure about.
Yeah. And that's, you know, so I'm still going to be hopeful if they don't make a move.
Okay.
If they do make a move, I think that it only increases their chance of getting to 94.
I like your optimism. I don't know about 94. I think you get in the playoffs with about 87. Now, 94 gets you, well, they're not going to win the division. The Mets are there. The Braves are there. They're not going to do that, but I guess you get a higher seed in the playoffs. The sixth seed gets no home games in the playoffs. Is that the way it works?
Can't possibly, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a higher seed will help them. That would be good. By the way, the segment with Ray and the Tommy McDonald moment was our Scheib Sports This Week in Philadelphia Sports History, brought to you by Scheib Sports. Visit them at their Center City location or at scheibsports.com. And let me say that this hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank, business banking at its best. Visit them at meridianbanker.com. 215-592-9494. Your call is coming up with Mike Sielski. I'm Glenn Macnow on 94 WIP.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, with Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack. Now, tomorrow with Jody Mack, I am really looking forward to doing these Saturday and Sunday shows with two people who I really enjoy, respect, get a chemistry, the whole thing. We're talking about, I've been doing what we're watching with Ray for all these years. Now I get to do it with two guys. We're going to cut up some sound, you know, do a new return. We had a kind of quick jerry-rigged one today with you. It sounded pretty good.
It was terrific. Yeah. I give Moshe all the credit in the world for doing that.
And what we said is it's tougher to find the name Jody in movies and TV, but Moshe, you found a couple?
Yeah, so Joe DeCamera gave us, you know, Jodie Foster.
Yeah,
so grabbed a little bit of that. And some callers called it that there's a character named Jody, played by Tyrese in the movie Baby Boy. So I found a couple bits from that. And
let's hear it.
All right.
With Glenn and
Jody.
And the winner is Jody.
My bestie, Jody.
Is this Jody?
Wow. Who was the fourth voice?
That's Snoop Dogg.
It is.
Wow.
In the movie Baby Boy.
Oh,
calling,
that's getting in.
Is this Jody? He's calling from prison.
give me the whole thing again. I want to hear it again. That was good.
With Glenn and
Jody.
And the winner is Jody.
My bestie, Jody.
Is this Jody?
Oh, yes. That's going to work.
That's cooler than anything you're going to get from me. Wow.
Oh, I mean, look, with you, it was like I had to pick and choose what mics to use. I could come up with hundreds of different great Mike Sielski intros.
Oh. Yeah, the one from The Godfather.
Common name.
Yeah, the one from The Godfather.
Wasn't Mikey, enough time, Michael.
Yeah, that one's got to stay.
Wasn't enough time.
All right, let's get to Bill in Seattle. Bill, what are you listening to us out in Seattle? What's up with that?
What's that? Why am I in Seattle?
Well, I mean, we appreciate a listener from Seattle. Are you an expat from here?
I grew up in Philadelphia.
There you go. Thanks. What's up?
I've been out here for a while, but, you know, I want to jump on something that Mike said a little earlier about the Eagles possibly turning over quarterbacks, you know, getting more rookies and letting them roll for 4 years or whatever. And I think that's exactly where they're going. I think a lot of the talk around Jalen Hurts kind of doesn't make sense. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I think that's a very good thing. And I think the Eagles see it that way, and they've built a team that doesn't depend a lot on him. Now, if he plays bad, obviously that's going to matter. If he plays great, that's going to matter. But this team isn't going to win or lose to make Jalen
I see what you're saying. Yeah, they're trying to build a team in which the quarterback is less of an X factor.
Well, and the point that I think Bill is getting at, which is really important, is that they are able to build a team like that because Jalen Hurts is on his rookie contract. You know, that was kind of the genius of the 2017 team, and the reason it won the Super Bowl was under the cap, they were spending so little cap space on the position of quarterback that you could go get Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, Chris Long, et cetera, et cetera. And to me, the bigger risk is, okay, then you pay a guy and he turns out to be Joe Flacco or Eli Manning in the second half of his career and he's just not worth that money.
Yeah, and which, by the way, good luck to the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, and that's unless you have that guy who really you know is that guy, right? Well, half a dozen guys in the league at most to be locked into paying a quarterback second contract for, you know, a contract that's got a lot of commas in it.
There are varying degrees of that, right? Like Matt Ryan didn't win a Super Bowl, but Matt Ryan stabilized the Falcons franchise for a decade. Mm-hmm. Certainly that was money well spent. Kyler Murray, Joe Flacco, Eli Manning on a second or third contract, not so much.
By the way, this hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank. Business banking at its best. Visit them at meridianbanker.com. Hey, one of the things I really try to do in every show is talk about all of the teams. And one of the reasons I appreciate that I'm going to be working with you on Saturday and Jody on Sunday is that you're both hockey guys.
Oh, yeah.
And you both follow the league, care about the league, and can talk ably about the league. You almost have become a symbol of, and that's not the word I want to use. What do I want to use? Somebody who stood up early and recognized that this Flyers franchise was going the wrong way. And it's really before they became as decrepit as they are.
Yeah.
Okay, this has been an interesting offseason because they let go of Oscar Lindblom. Okay, it wasn't a popular move at all, but whatever. They signed a couple of – well, they made a trade for Tony DeAngelo, which – and gave him a lot of money and gave up a lot of resources for that. They signed a guy who has been called the worst forward in the league in Delorier to a two-year deal for a good amount of money. They were not in a position to sign the best player ever to come out of this area who wanted to come home and play for the hometown team. Mike, what the hell are they doing?
Good question, Glenn. I think what they ought to be doing is rebuilding. What they ought to be doing is acknowledging what has happened around the NHL since the salary cap went into effect, which is that a team, generally speaking, has to be really, really bad for a while before it becomes really, really good.
Sounds very processy.
I know, and I know that's a hot-button term around here.
Not a fan of the process.
Just one example. Colorado Avalanche just won the Stanley Cup. They've been, you know, a top five, top 10 team in the league for the last few years. They went over an 11-year stretch where they made the playoffs three times. Their top six scorers this season were all players who were taken in the first round, four of them by the Avalanche. So that's kind of the template of the way the league works now. And the Flyers haven't gotten, as bad as they are now, they haven't been bad enough for a long enough period of time.
You tell me I got to watch worse hockey?
I think you kind of do.
I watched some really bad hockey this year.
I know, but I think you kind of do. You know, and I know it's not something that fans want to hear, especially since the Ed Snyder years conditioned them to the team going in, all in every single year.
Yeah, and having the ability like, oh, we shouldn't have gotten Paul Coffey. That's okay. We'll just spend our way out of it.
Exactly. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And you haven't been able to do it for a while. And it's a shame to a great degree, but this is where they're at.
Okay. So what, how do I want to ask this? What are they doing? What do you do now? I mean, because now you got what you got. And actually, I'll ask you a different question. What does this all mean for Carter Hart?
Well, Carter Hart is going to have to withstand some stuff. I think in terms of the roster around him.
Because last year wasn't bad enough for him.
Here's the one sliver of a silver lining, so to speak. John Tortorella, if he does nothing else, coaches his team to play jagged edge hockey and tough defense. I covered the Rangers in New York when he was the coach there. In 2012, they were the best team in the Eastern Conference, and they were largely the best team because they basically set up a wall in front of Henrik Lundqvist and made things as easy as possible for a guy who was already one of the league's best goaltenders. They blocked shots. They played relatively conservatively, you know, defensive structure, all that sort of stuff. My guess is Tortorella is going to have the Flyers playing in a similar kind of style without the top-end talent that that Rangers team had. That Rangers team had some firepower offensively that this Flyers team just does not have. So you're going to see a team, I think, that loses 2-1 an awful lot or 2-0 an awful lot. You know, but
so bad and boring.
Yeah, kind of. I wish there were a better way to express this and more optimism that I could lend, but I don't think it's there.
All right. I appreciate that. Kenny in San Diego's with us. Hey, Kenny. Boy, we're getting all the West Coast calls right now.
It's
morning out there. Hey, Ken. You with us, Ken?
Kenny went back to bed.
Yeah, well, if he calls.
We lost him.
We'll get him back.
Okay.
Let's get Frank in Stone Harbor. Hello, Frank.
Hey, buds, how you doing? I got a question and then a 6 degrees of separation, but let me start off by saying how wonderfully torturous that was to hear Ray on and not have him in the studio. That was just a gem.
I know. And hey, he said he'll come on every once in a while. I'm liking the direction of my shows moving forward with Mike and Jody. I will always cherish the 21 years I got to work with Ray.
Agreed. Okay, so the question is, in what – I'm all for Jalen starting out great. But in what degree or fashion does he have to, if he would have a subpar start, does your mind set start to go towards, okay, I'm leaning towards the balance of closing the book on Jalen and starting to look ahead to finding somebody else?
Are you talking about benching him during the season, or are you talking about...
How subpar of a start?
It's tough, and I'm going to go to Mike in a second on this because you talked about this earlier. Here's the problem. If he plays poorly and they're winning games and they're in the playoff hunt, you have to think about benching him because you want to make the playoffs. If he plays poorly and the team's doing poorly, Mike, you're suggesting you got to stick with him for other reasons.
I'm not necessarily saying that I would. I think Gardner Minshew can, in certain situations, can play at a level equal to or in some situations better than Jalen Hurts. What I'm suggesting is the Eagles are going to be very reluctant to bench him just based on poor performance, because they will look at it as, we can't just let him walk away, and we're depressing the asset, we're lowering his value if we bench him. So I would be surprised if he gets benched. I really would. It would have to be Bobby Hoying levels of terribleness.
Yeah, I don't expect that. But to me, again, it is this. If you're 8-5, but your quarterback's a problem, you're winning because your defense is great, you win because the running game is great, but you know that the quarterback can't do it. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but Frank is asking us, what if? That's when I gotta get somebody I trust.
I would be surprised. Do you really think Nick Sirianni is going to be able to make that call? Do you think he has the power to make that call? I'm skeptical of that.
It's a fair point, Frank.
Tightrope between a business decision and performance.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So real quick, 6 degrees of separation. Glenn, you were involved in a play that my brother-in-law was part of. Mark Thompson out of Del County. He spoke very highly.
Mark is great. We were in Anything Goes together, and Mark is a terrific and talented actor and a fine gentleman.
He is, and he might know just as much, if not more, about fine beverages as you do.
Yeah, he's a good beer guy. Absolutely, he is. Give him my best, and thanks for checking in. And I believe that tomorrow I'm going to be able to announce officially that I'm in a new play coming up this fall.
First of all,
I love acting.
First of all, congratulations.
Thanks.
Second of all, I told you the other day when we were on it with Angelo, this is a point of commonality that you and I have. I acted a little bit in college.
Mm-hmm.
We did a at LaSalle. We did a play play version of 12 Angry Men at the time. We called
Which one were you? Were you Henry Fonda?
No.
Oh, you'd be a good Henry Fonda.
Thanks. I was the foreman of the jury, who was Martin Balsam.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah, completely disinterested.
Exactly. we called it 12 Angry Jurors because there were actually 8 angry men and 4 angry women. So
okay, well, there you go. That's good.
But it was a ton of fun, and I look back on that very fondly.
So here's the thing. So I acted in high school, and I acted in college, and I kind of, you know, graduated from college and started working and got married and then, you know, had kids and got away from it. That was it. But I always wanted to get back to it. Always. And I talked about it, you know, decades past.
Mm-hmm.
You know Anthony Sanfilippo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. A very talented hockey writer.
Yes.
Broadcaster, all those things. And a really good director. He's a theater guy.
Wow, I didn't know that.
He went to college and studied theater. It's really what he does. Trust me, it's better than his hockey writing.
Anthony, that was Glenn, that was not me.
And my producer way back when I started on WIP, and he said to me one time, if you ever want to get back into it, you better do it because you ain't getting younger.
Wow.
And so about 6 years ago, I auditioned for a play that he directed. I got in, and I've done several of them since and challenged myself by singing and dancing, which, trust me, does not come that naturally, but I survived it. And I auditioned for a play last week, and I am going to, I think, be able to announce tomorrow. That's it. And then I'll rope you into coming out to it.
Oh, you don't have to rope. I will absolutely do that.
There you go. Let's sneak in Kenny here from San Diego. You with us, Ken?
Hey, guys.
There
sorry
you go.
About that.
That's all right.
Had a little connectivity issues. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
I got a couple questions for you. First, one thing you might not know that you have in common with Michael, Glenn, is that you were a sports business writer when you first started with the Inquirer,
that
and Michael
correct.
Was the treasurer. Michael was the treasurer of his high school class. So you guys both have that money background.
That is that right? Was he a good treasurer? Were the book? Did they even have? Was there embezzlement
issues? There was a little SEC conversation afterwards, but you know,
I deny everything.
Yeah. Anyway, so what I wanted to talk about was, first, really congratulations to Mike. This is so cool to see your career progressing and all that stuff, and it's really good.
Thank you, Kenny. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem. So what I wanted to talk about was about the Phillies itself, but your Flyers comment right before that brought up an idea in mind, which is, knowing the fan base, is Fletcher just there saying, in effect, that they're trying to tank but do it in a more artful way than what Hinkie did with the Sixers? Because I love Hinkie's approach, and I'm wondering whether they just don't think the fan base would tolerate that. I don't agree with that assumption, but I don't know if that's what they're thinking.
I think that is definitely factoring into their thinking. And I've actually written this in a column. I actually wrote that it was time for the Flyers to kind of come out and acknowledge publicly that they were rebuilding, that they were – just say something as simple as, we're not going to win the Stanley Cup next year. We're just not. But I think you are right in that they are fearful that the fan base will rebel, react negatively to that.
Yep.
I can't blame them. I mean, they're kind of in a catch-22 here. There's only one way out of the mess they've created for themselves, but they can't really acknowledge publicly that they need to take that way out.
Give me quickly your thoughts on the Phil's bullpen here.
Yeah, thoughts on the Phillies bullpen is this. We're walking kind of a knife's edge with Brad Hand and Alvarado at times. I actually think, in theory, if you can't get a starter and the price for, say, Jose Quintana and Tyler Mahle is prohibitive, maybe you look at Colorado and you look at somebody like Daniel Bard or something like that. You add him to a bullpen, not necessarily to be a closer, but just as another arm out there in case. The other thing I thought about watching the game last night, the Pirates play Ben Gamel in left field now, but he played a lot in center field.
Yeah.
He made some good plays last night look easy. I wonder if
he's
could get somebody like him to play center field just to stabilize things defensively.
He's okay. He's very average. And average is better than Odubel. And average is probably better than Vierling. And he's completely unexciting, but if you can get him on – I mean – the prospects we talked about earlier, I'm not giving up any of those for Ben Gamel, but I would take them.
No, and I like Kenny's thinking in terms of being a little creative in terms of how you are going to address areas of weakness. You know, find a left fielder who can play center field better than anybody you have right now. If you can't get a fourth or fifth starter, okay, bolster the bullpen with somebody who can pitch an inning or two. I'm sure Dave Dombrowski is going through all of these options and looking at what's out there, and we'll see. I mean, like as I said earlier, I would be stunned if they didn't make a move. I just don't think it's going to be to the degree that a lot of people want.
Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack. Now we'll come back, wrap it up, take a call or two, find out what we forgot to talk about right here on 94 WIP. 94 WIP, I'm Glenn Mack. Now Mike Sielski is with me. By the way, tomorrow's show, I'll be with Jody Mack, and tomorrow, a couple of great guests. Brian Baldinger tomorrow at 11, and Dick Vermeil tomorrow at noon. Dick is going to be inducted the following weekend into the Hall of Fame in Canton. I love Dick Vermeil. I mean, I don't remember Dick as coach of the Eagles, right? You're too young for that, but you know him as a personality.
I know him as a personality. I spent some time with him about a week and a half ago at his home in Chester County for a big piece I'm writing for the
Inquirer. I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing a big story about him. And it was great. It's always great to spend time with him. You would never know from interacting with him that he is 85 years old. It's amazing.
No. It is amazing, and he is such a gentleman. He is such a good guy. You know, people sometimes ask me, I'm sure you get asked the question, you know, you mean, like, is this guy a good guy? You meet a lot of athletes, coaches, are they good guys? And to me, in all the years I've been in Philadelphia, I mean, I know I'm opening up this topic kind of late in the show, and it's a big topic that you and I can discuss sometimes. The guys I have met, the stars, the superstars, who are the nicest guys, my list starts with Bernie Parent, who's become a very close friend of mine, which is ironic because he broke my heart as a teenager when I was growing up in Buffalo, which he loves to remind me of, but that's okay. Reggie White was just a great, great guy. And Dick Vermeil, Charlie Manuel. I'm sure there are others, but those are the ones that come to mind. You've dealt with a lot of guys who are the ones that you really, I'm not saying they're friends, but guys you really respect and see as gentlemen.
I would put Dick near the top of that list. I would put Brian Dawkins at the top of that list. He's one of the few athletes that I've encountered in my 20 years of covering Philadelphia sports where you really felt like you had to be absolutely on the top of your game when you were talking to him, because there was just something about him that commanded that kind of respect and that need to be at your best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good one as well. By the way, Brian Westbrook, who I've dealt with some, is also true. There are a bunch. Someday we'll do a show on that. But those are the ones that come off the top of my head. And Dick Vermeil, I'm very excited. Jody and I'll have Dick on tomorrow and talk about him going to Canton. You think he'll have an opinion on how the Eagles are practicing these days?
Oh, I can't imagine.
You know what he'll say? This is what he'll say. He'll kind of say what Ray said, which is, not the way I did it.
Right.
Things have changed. Nick's a smart guy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Glenn, just to be very quick about this, that's one of the things I want to explore in this piece I'm writing about him, is that I think people forget how much of a hard-driving coach he was when he was here in Philadelphia, because we've gotten so accustomed to seeing him as the very emotional, even a TV pitch man in some ways. That's how he's known now among later generations of Eagles fans, and I think people need a bit of a reminder about what he was like as a coach when he got here.
Intense.
Yes, very much so.
Very intense. One other thing I want to ask you about before we get to Moshe Kravitz for what we forgot to talk about. It has been a big story. I know you wrote about it. It's an issue I have talked about a lot. I think this may be one where you and I have very different opinions, which is the Sixers announced a week before this week that they intend to build their own arena, and their goal is to build it in Center City, right around 10th and Market, an area called the Fashion District, which is not that fashionable, but okay, that's what it's called. I do not love this idea. I'll let you go first. What do you think about the viability of it and if they've got the right spot?
The more I've thought about this, my initial reaction, I should say, off the top was, oh, this sounds interesting. But the more I've thought about it, the less I think I like the idea. Number one, you look at study after study, and I know that the Sixers' ownership and managing partners are saying that they're going to pay for all this themselves. They're not going to use taxpayer funds. But if you look at study after study, we'll believe it when we see it. A downtown arena doesn't really, in the main, do a lot to improve the economy of a downtown. I don't think the Union's soccer stadium has done a whole lot for Chester, just as one example.
No.
So there's that. I think Philadelphia as a culture and just in terms of infrastructure does not have the public transportation and is not of a mindset to take public transportation to the degree that would be necessary to make a downtown arena work. Those suburban dollars and those suburban commuters can easily get to South Philadelphia off of 95 and the Schuylkill Expressway, not so much for an arena at 10th and Market.
Yep. I didn't know you felt that way.
Yeah, you know, I kind of come around on
it. And it's very much the way I feel. Listen, I understand why they want to build their own arena, and more power to them. They don't know who wants to be a tenant when you can have your own
right.
place. It will be interesting when they build that place to see, like, what ends up at the Wells Fargo Center and what ends up there. College basketball, is Villanova going to move there? The concerts, you know, there are a lot of events. I will say that they've done a great job improving the Wells Fargo Center. It's a very modern building. It's a very nice building. They've done a nice job with it. But this will be something new to compete with it. You kind of come from my perspective of, in theory, it's nice to have an arena downtown, and everybody thinks, like, hey, after the game, we'll go out for drinks and, you know, dinner and so on, and we'll help those businesses. But most of the time, it's empty.
Yeah.
During the day, it's a whole city block that nobody's really using other than the people who work in the arena, which aren't that many. And at most, you're talking, okay, 50 Sixers games, maybe 50 other events. That's 100 out of 365 nights. It ain't going to help the economy. And I'm all for going green and people taking public transportation. But as you pointed out, this is not a city like New York, Boston, a couple others, where everybody's going to do it. And, you know, the people who like this may say, like, yeah, those old suburbanites, screw them. But those old suburbanites, that's a big part of your base.
And yeah. We don't know what the city's going to look like 9 years from now when presumably this would open. So I'm skeptical. Needless to say, I'm skeptical.
All right. This hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank. Business banking at its best. Visit the meridianbanker.com. Moshe Kravitz, I believe we've pretty much covered every topic there is to cover today.
Yeah, I mean, I had to make stuff up practically. with some of these, it feels like it. For example, Jason Kelce the other day showing up at practice with bubble wrap on his helmet, which I thought was hysterical. I wanted to get your guys' opinion, and also the root of it happening because certain positions on all NFL teams during training camp are wearing these things called guardian caps,
yeah.
which are supposed to reduce the chances of concussions. I don't know why all positions aren't doing that. And if we can reduce concussions further than the current NFL helmets are reducing them, why don't these guardian caps become a permanent part of the helmet?
All right.
So besides the bubble wrap, what do you guys think about this?
I think
wackiness?
It's offensive linemen, linebackers,
tight ends.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Were you down there when they were wearing those?
I was not, no.
Okay. I saw them on TV, as
so did
you
I.
did. It looks like the Great Gazoo. If you remember, that was Flintstones and Jetsons
yes.
or whatever, right? That guy. I imagine the reason they're not going to do it all the time is it probably slows you down. Right?
It probably makes your head heavier, right?
Yeah.
Like you're literally carrying more weight up there.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's a really serious issue in football, and it's something that we kind of conveniently turn a blind eye to because we love the sport so much. But it's there, and it matters, and as silly as it looks, if it helps, that's a good thing.
I love what Kelce said when he wore the bubble wrap, which is the what do they call that helmet, Moshe? I forget what
it is. Guardian cap.
The guardian cap is supposed to give us 20% more protection. I guess the bubble wrap gives me another 2 to 3%, so I'm going with it. Hey, listen— he's the greatest ever.
I was there a couple of weeks ago in Sea Isle City when he did his fundraiser at the Ocean Drive. The way that people respond to him and the way that he responds to the people around here, it's unlike anything I think I've ever seen. Probably since dating to when the Flyers were winning Stanley Cups in the 70s, like that level of a connection with the community.
And we were talking a couple minutes ago about the guys who are actually great guys. He's actually a great guy.
Oh, yeah. He's
tremendous.
He's
actually a man of the people and a great guy. Hall of Famer?
I think so, yes.
That would be pretty damn special.
Yeah.
Definitely retired the number.
Yeah, I think he's cleared that threshold
All
already.
Right. All right, Moshe, what else we got?
All right, sticking with the Eagles, I'm starting to get a little concerned about Jonathan Gannon's scheme for this defense. Hassan Reddick has basically only thrived in the NFL as a pass rusher, and yet him and Brandon Graham, who's coming off of an injury, were both seen dropping back into coverage at training camp the other day. Your thoughts?
Mosh. What's the date today, Mosh?
It's July 30th. Okay. You're telling me this is the most important time for football, Glenn?
When does the season start?
Start tomorrow?
No.
I got it wrong.
September 11th. I don't know if you see it differently, but whatever they're doing in practice now, whatever Jalen Hurts' stats are now, whatever schemes they run on offense and defense and whatever, it's July. They're going to try a lot of things on for size. If Hassan Reddick dropping back into coverage on July 30th is not something I will lose sleep about.
I share your lack of concern over this. Having said that,
I hear there's a however.
Any snap during the regular season that Hassan Reddick is on the field and he is dropping back into coverage is a snap that the opposing team's head coach and offensive coordinator feel a little bit better about.
Okay, so this is a cautionary kind of word from you and from a very concerned Moshe Kratz.
Yeah, hopefully it's the last time we see that. And moving on to the Sixers, luck something that didn't happen this week, but apparently there were some talks about Kevin Durant going to the Celtics, which would probably preclude the Sixers from having any shot at a championship. So there was a trade rumored that did not happen. But if Kevin Durant were to stay in
that's
the Eastern
all in
Conference,
flux, right? All that the Durant thing is still in flux, and
yes,
yeah. There was a report today that apparently the Nets are still hoping that Kevin Durant will withdraw his trade request. It's a whole thing, but is there a worst case and a worse scenario for the Sixers than Kevin Durant going to the Celtics?
Just so I'm clear. The Celtics are already better than the Sixers.
100%, yes.
Okay, so if they get Kevin Durant, how much worse does this get for the Sixers? What I mean is, Kevin Durant to the Celtics.
Bleak to hopeless?
Yeah, Kevin Durant to the Celtics would be bad, but the Celtics already have shown that they're ahead of the Sixers, so I'm not sure how much worse it could get.
Well, I do think the Sixers closed the gap a little bit this summer. I like the P.J. Tucker and D'Anthony Melton signings.
I like the P.J. Tucker and Anthony Melton signings. I don't know that that gets you past the second round. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I agree.
They had to do what they did, but I'm not sure the gap is closed that
much.
So
I guess what they're going to have to do, the Sixers, if they're kind of stuck in this spot is...
Oh, Glenn.
So you're going to have the Flyers and the Sixers in the process at the same time?
No, the Sixers... As long as Joel Embiid is upright, the Sixers are not processing again.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, Mike, I got to tell you, this is our first episode, and it's really been a pleasure. I want to, give you the opportunity to, say hi to your family and fans and friends and all that.
No, I just want
to
say...
your expired parking meter. By the way, pro tip, get a parking spot that lasts you past the show for post-show meetings and all that.
I tried, but I had to get in here because there were meetings to be done and preparation to be done. Thank you to everybody for listening. Glenn, thank you. I'm looking forward to where this show is headed in the weeks and months to come. And this has been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. So, Moshe, I'm hanging around because the next show is they're kind of stuck in traffic. So I will do that. Mike, I'll talk to you during the week. What's your next column?
Good question. Okay. Probably something Eagles related early this week.
That's fine. I'm sorry.
I'm flying off the seat of my pants here, Glenn.
Yeah, that's fine. You did a nice job today. Really good job by you. Really professional and a lot of fun. I will see you next week. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Meridian Bank. Business banking at its best. Visit them at meridianbanker.com. I may be here when we get back. I will be here when we get back. Well,
yeah,
there you go.
About 15 more minutes.
15 more minutes. Great. Do me a favor, people. I got nothing else to talk about. 215-592-9494. If you call now, I promise you're on in the next segment. I want to talk to you. 215-592-9494. Moshe Kravitz, nice job. And you'll continue to do it right here on 94 WIP.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
94 WIP, I'm Glenn Mackinow. Mike Sielski is with me. By the way, tomorrow's show, I'll be with Jody Mack, and tomorrow, a couple of great guests. Brian Baldinger tomorrow at 11, and Dick Vermeil tomorrow at noon. Dick is going to be inducted the following weekend into the Hall of Fame in Canton. I love Dick Vermeil. I mean, I don't remember Dick as coach of the Eagles, right? You're too young for that, but you know him as a personality.
I know him as a personality. I spent some time with him about a week and a half ago at his home in Chester County for a big piece I'm writing for the
Inquirer. I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing a big story about him. And it was great. It's always great to spend time with him. You would never know from interacting with him that he is 85 years old. It's amazing.
No. It is amazing, and he is such a gentleman. He is such a good guy. You know, people sometimes ask me, I'm sure you get asked the question, you mean, they're like, is this guy a good guy? You meet a lot of athletes, coaches, are they good guys? And to me, in all the years I've been in Philadelphia, I mean, I know I'm opening up this topic kind of late in the show, and it's a big topic that you and I can discuss sometimes. The guys I have met, the stars, the superstars, who are the nicest guys, my list starts with Bernie Parent, who's become a very close friend of mine, which is ironic because he broke my heart as a teenager when I was growing up in Buffalo, which he loves to remind me of, but that's okay. Reggie White was just a great, great guy. And Dick Vermeil, Charlie Manuel. I'm sure there are others, but those are the ones that come to mind. You've dealt with a lot of guys who are the ones that you really, I'm not saying they're friends, but guys you really respect and see as gentlemen.
I would put Dick near the top of that list. I would put Brian Dawkins at the top of that list. He's one of the few athletes that I've encountered in my 20 years of covering Philadelphia sports where you really felt like you had to be absolutely on the top of your game when you were talking to him, because there was just something about him that commanded that kind of respect and that need to be at your best.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. That's a good one as well. By the way, Brian Westbrook, who I've dealt with some, is also true. There are
he
a bunch.
Is.
Someday we'll do a show on that. But those are the ones that come from the top of off the top of my head. And Dick Vermeil, I'm very excited. Jody and I'll have Dick on tomorrow and talk about him going to Canton. You think he'll have an opinion on how the Eagles are practicing these days?
Oh, I can't imagine.
You know what he'll say? This is what he'll say. He'll kind of say what Ray said, which is not the way I did it.
Right.
Things have changed. Nick's a smart guy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Glenn, just to be very quick about this, that's one of the things I want to explore in this piece I'm writing about him, is that I think people forget how much of a hard-driving coach he was when he was here in Philadelphia, because we've gotten so accustomed to seeing him as the very emotional, you know, even a TV pitch man in some ways. That's how he's known now among later generations of Eagles fans, and I think people need a bit of a reminder about what he was like as a coach when he got here.
Intense.
Yes, very much so.
Very intense. One other thing I want to ask you about before we get to Moshe Kravitz for what we forgot to talk about. It has been a big story. I know you wrote about it. It's an issue I have talked about a lot. I think this may be one where you and I have very different opinions, which is the Sixers announced a week before this week that they intend to build their own arena, and their goal is to build it in Center City, right around 10th and Market, an area called the Fashion District, which is not that fashionable, but okay, that's what it's called. I do not love this idea. I'll let you go first. What do you think about the viability of it and if they've got the right spot?
The more I've thought about this, my initial reaction, I should say, off the top was, oh, this sounds interesting. But the more I've thought about it, the less I think I like the idea. Number one, you look at study after study, and I know that the Sixers' ownership and managing partners are saying that they're going to pay for all this themselves. They're not going to use taxpayer funds. But if you look at study after study, we'll believe it when we see it. A downtown arena doesn't really, in the main, do a lot to improve the economy of a downtown. I don't think the Union's soccer stadium has done a whole lot for Chester, just as one example.
No.
So there's that. I think Philadelphia, as a culture and just in terms of infrastructure, does not have the public transportation and is not of a mindset to take public transportation to the degree that would be necessary to make a downtown arena work. Those suburban dollars and those suburban commuters can easily get to South Philadelphia off of 95 and the Schuylkill Expressway, not so much for an arena at 10th and Market.
Yep, I didn't know you felt that way.
Yeah, you know, I kind of come around on it.
And it's very much the way I feel. Listen, I understand why they want to build their own arena, and more power to them. They don't know who wants to be a tenant when you can have your own place. It will be interesting when they build that place to see, like, what ends up at the Wells Fargo Center and what ends up there. College basketball. Is Villanova going to move there? The concerts. You know, there are a lot of events. I will say that they've done a great job improving the Wells Fargo Center. It's a very modern building. It's a very nice building. They've done a nice job with it. But this will be something new to compete with it. You kind of come from my perspective of, in theory, it's nice to have an arena downtown, and everybody thinks, like, hey, after the game, we'll go out for drinks and, you know, dinner and so on, and we'll help those businesses. But most of the time, it's empty. Yeah. During the day, it's a whole city block that nobody's really using other than the people who work in the arena, which aren't that many. And at most, you're talking, okay, 50 Sixers games, maybe 50 other events. That's 100 out of 365 nights. It ain't going to help the economy. And I'm all for going green and people taking public transportation. But as you pointed out, this is not a city like New York, Boston, a couple others, where everybody's going to do it. And, you know, the people who like this may say, like, yeah, those old suburbanites, screw them. But those old suburbanites, that's a big part of your base.
And yeah. We don't know what the city's going to look like 9 years from now when presumably this would open. So I'm skeptical. Needless to say, I'm skeptical.
All right. This hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank. Business banking at its best. Visit the meridianbanker.com. Moshe Kravitz, I believe we've pretty much covered every topic there is to cover today.
Yeah, I mean, I had to make stuff up practically. with some of these, it feels like it. For example, Jason Kelce the other day showing up at practice with bubble wrap on his helmet, which I thought was hysterical. I wanted to get your guys' opinion, and also the root of it happening, because certain positions on all NFL teams during training camp are wearing these things called guardian caps, which are supposed to reduce the chances of concussions. I don't know why all positions aren't doing that. And if we can reduce concussions further than the current NFL helmets are reducing them, why don't these guardian caps become a permanent part of the helmet?
All right.
So besides the bubble wrap, what do you guys think about this?
I think
wackiness?
It's offensive linemen, linebackers,
tight ends.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Were you down there when they were wearing those?
I was not, no.
Okay. I saw them on TV, as
so did
you
I.
did. It looks like the Great Gazoo. If you remember, that was Flintstones and Jetsons,
yes,
or whatever, right? That guy. I imagine the reason they're not going to do it all the time is it probably slows you down. I mean, right?
It probably makes your head heavier, right? Yeah. Like you're literally carrying more weight up there.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's a really serious issue in football, and it's something that we kind of conveniently turn a blind eye to because we love the sport so much. But it's there, and it matters, and as silly as it looks, if it helps, that's a good thing.
I love what Kelce said when he wore the bubble wrap, which is the what do they call that helmet, Mosh? I forget what
it is. Guardian cap.
The guardian cap is supposed to give us 20% more protection. I guess the bubble wrap gives me another 2 to 3%, so I'm going with it. Hey, listen, he's the greatest ever.
I was there a couple of weeks ago in Seattle City when he did his fundraiser at the Ocean Drive. The way that people respond to him and the way that he responds to the people around here, it's unlike anything I think I've ever seen. Probably since dating to when the Flyers were winning Stanley Cups in the 70s, like that level of a connection with the community.
And we were talking a couple minutes ago about the guys who are actually great guys. He's actually a great guy.
Oh, yeah. He's
tremendous.
He's
actually a man of the people and a great guy. Hall of Famer?
I think so, yes.
That would be pretty damn special.
Yeah.
Definitely retired the number.
Yeah, I think he's cleared that threshold already.
Right. All right, Mosh, what else we got?
All right, sticking with the Eagles, I'm starting to get a little concerned about Jonathan Gannon's scheme for this defense. Hassan Reddick has basically only thrived in the NFL as a pass rusher, and yet him and Brandon Graham, who's coming off of an injury, were both seen dropping back into coverage at training camp the other day. Your thoughts?
Mosh. What's the date today, Mosh?
It's July 30th. Okay. You're telling me most important time for football, Glenn?
When does the season start?
Start tomorrow?
No.
I got it wrong.
September 11th. I mean, Mike, I don't know if you see it differently, but whatever they're doing in practice now, whatever Jalen Hurts' stats are now, whatever schemes they run on offense and defense and whatever, it's July. They're going to try a lot of things on for size. If Hassan Reddick dropping back into coverage on July 30th is not something I will lose sleep about.
I share your lack of concern over this. Having said that,
I hear there's a however.
Any snap during the regular season that Hassan Reddick is on the field and he is dropping back into coverage is a snap that the opposing team's head coach and offensive coordinator feel a little bit better about.
Okay, so this is a cautionary kind of word from you and from a very concerned Moshe Kratz.
Yeah, hopefully it's the last time we see that. And moving on to the Sixers, luck, something that didn't happen this week, but apparently there were some talks about Kevin Durant going to the Celtics, which would probably preclude the Sixers from having any shot at a championship. So there was a trade rumored that did not happen. But if Kevin Durant were to stay in the Eastern Conference,
right? All that, the Durant thing is still in flux. And
yes.
Yeah, there was a report today that apparently the Nets are still hoping that Kevin Durant will withdraw his trade request. It's a whole thing, but is there a worse scenario for the Sixers than Kevin Durant going to the Celtics?
Just so I'm clear, the Celtics are already better than the Sixers.
100%, yes.
Okay, so if they get Kevin Durant, how much worse does this get for the Sixers? What I mean is, okay, yeah, Kevin Durant to the Celtics.
Bleak to hopeless?
Yeah, Kevin Durant
1%
to the Celtics would be bad, but the Celtics already have shown that they're ahead of the Sixers, so I'm not sure how much worse it could get.
Well, I do think the Sixers closed the gap a little bit this summer. Like, I like the P.J. Tucker and D'Anthony Melton signings.
I like the P.J. Tucker and Anthony Melton signings. I don't know that that gets you past the second round. That's the problem.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
They're kind of,
they had to do what they did, but I'm not sure the gap is closed that much.
I guess what they're going to have to do, the Sixers, if they're kind of stuck in this spot, is...
Oh, Glenn.
So you're going to have the Flyers and the Sixers in the process at the same time?
No, the Sixers... As long as Joel Embiid is upright, the Sixers are not processing again.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, Mike, I got to tell you, this is our first episode, and it's really been a pleasure. I want to, you know, give you the opportunity to, you know, say hi to your family and fans and friends and all that.
No, I just want
to
say...
your expired parking meter. By the way, pro tip, get a parking spot that lasts you past the show for post-show meetings and all that.
I tried, but I had to get in here because there were meetings to be done and preparation to be done. Thank you to everybody for listening. Glenn, thank you. I'm looking forward to where this show is headed in the weeks and months to come. And this has been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. So, Moshe, I'm hanging around because the next show is they're kind of stuck in traffic. So I will do that. Mike, I'll talk to you during the week. What's your next column?
Good question. Okay. Probably something Eagles related early this week.
That's fine. I'm sorry.
I'm flying off the seat of my pants here, Glenn.
Yeah, that's fine. You did a nice job today. Really good job by you. Really professional and a lot of fun. I will see you next week. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Meridian Bank. Business banking at its best. Visit them at meridianbanker.com. I may be here when we get back. I will be here when we get back. Well,
yeah,
there you go.
For about 15 more minutes.
15 more minutes. Great. Do me a favor, people. I got nothing else to talk about. 215-592-9494. If you call now, I promise you're on in the next segment. I want to talk to you. 215-592-9494. Moshe Kravitz, nice job. And you'll continue to do it right here on 94 WIP.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.